another New Zealand Doctor podcast. This is an audio version of The First Time, a series of articles written and presented by me, Dr. Joe Scott Jones. The First Time articles are intended to stimulate thinking for young GPs coming across things for the first time, and also put some grease on the ball bearings of old codgers like me. This time, we're going to talk about taking responsibility. Peter Parker, also known as Spider-Man, has a formative conversation with his Uncle Ben, who, channeling his inner Voltaire, tells the young mutant, "With great power comes great responsibility." Doctors, like it or not, are given great power by the community. We are trusted guides, teachers, community leaders, and ambassadors of a healthy life who are expected to behave with professional integrity and decorum. These people trust us. Not as much as firefighters, paramedics, rescue volunteers, nurses, or pilots, according to the latest surveys, but all the same, they trust us to take responsibility for the consequences of our advice and guidance. We aren't accountants, who are the 25th most trusted profession on these surveys, and can forward every piece of advice with a caveat declaring themselves devoid of any responsibility for their own actions. But where does our responsibility end? We can't avoid responsibility, we have to take it. Recalls. There's an endless debate within surgery teams about the balance between the provider's accountability for patient outcomes and the idea that people should take responsibility for themselves. How many times do you have to remind someone that their cervical smear is due before you stop spending time and money fruitlessly recalling them? When a patient says, "Don't ever ask me to have a smear again," is it the right thing to do to accede to their wishes? What happens if they change their mind later on? We debate where the responsibility stops because we care about our patients, but we need to balance this sense of responsibility with our ability as an organisation to undertake the workload, especially when there's no income linked to recalling someone. We are only paid if they actually come in. The important thing is to ensure that your system keeps the doors open for people who don't choose what is advised. You need to document a reasonable effort to communicate with the service benefits and risks to the patient. For our team, this involves three letters, a phone call, and a text message before we declare someone declined. We then leave them on the recall list and send a reminder each recall cycle, even if they've said they don't want us to. And we leave the patient prompt system working so that when a face-to-face consultation happens, the clinician is reminded to talk about the issue with the patient. We don't feel this level of concern is harassment because, although we're expecting the patient's right to refuse treatment, we're also keeping them fully informed as we weave our way through the patient's code of rights. In the area of results as well, we have problems. In the rarefied world of the ideal, everyone gets told every result every time a test is taken. It's pretty simple. It's the lowest risk strategy apart from the risk to the clinician's sanity and financial future. Is it adequate to say, "We'll let you know if anything needs to be done"? For us, the answer is, hopefully, since we can't practically do anything else. It is, however, vital alongside this to set up systems that ensure patients will be informed about significant results of blood tests, smears, biopsies and x-rays, and that we can task ourselves other results to follow up as needed. It's vital that all patients can access all results if they want to, either by follow-up appointment, a phone call, or dialing into their online health record through a patient portal. However, patient portals are not really a solution. Giving people access to the results is different from ensuring that they're fully informed about results and what they mean. Another area of contention is in referrals. Is it okay to accept a rejection letter from the DHB because the patient referral doesn't meet the urgency criteria set by some services manager? How do you deal with the specialist who organises tests and then relies on the GP to follow up results? Patients have to expect some rationing of services, but they also have a right to access care that is life-saving and urgent. And even in a resource-limited environment, we have the responsibility to the patient to advocate for what is the preferred treatment. We need to explain the rejection letter to our patient and advise them of the next best option for their care. We need to work to improve access to the service, but thankfully the Medical Council assures us we cannot be held responsible in any forum for not providing what is not in our power to provide. It's quite big of them, really. As for the colleague who expects you to follow up results of tests they arrange, as Jar Jar Binks eloquently puts it in Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace, how rude. Good medical practice suggests that when transferring care to a colleague or delegating responsibility to another, the referring doctor maintains responsibility for that decision and its consequences. The risk lies to the patient when that communication breaks down, and as the recipient of the information, you have to act. With little power comes little responsibility. Unfortunately, we can't ignore the power we're given as professionals by our communities. Be safe. First, you save yourself. Follow up your own test results. Double check any significant results that you've seen and make sure they've been actioned. Even if someone else has arranged them, act on every letter and let everyone know everything. Well, that's it for this New Zealand Doctor podcast. Be sure to look out for the magazine, available through search engines of your choice. Follow me on Twitter @